Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode number 30 of Real Blend, a podcast that is actually planning a field trip to the last remaining Blockbuster video store. Possibly, if Kevin can't us all to book our flights. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing editor here at Cinema Blend, and one of three co-hosts of Real Blend. So let's get right to my colleagues post-haste, because we have a lot of show to get to today, starting with Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Back with us after missing last week's.
I missed you guys very much, but thank you to Gabe for thinking of including me in the podcast. I missed you guys in Paris, but I just saw Mission Impossible, so now I'm all caught up with you guys. So.
Well, and we are going to talk about that shortly, but first we have to introduce Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, hello.
Hello. How are you, handsome?
Wonderful. I love your hat. It looks really nice.
Thanks. It's blue.
Yes, it is. Real Blend is a live podcast that airs on Cinema Blend's Facebook page. And there's a fair number of you guys that watch the show as it happens. So if you're doing that right now, hello. Be sure to leave us comments and questions on the Facebook feed. And Gabe, producer Gabe, will funnel them to us. But the rest of you guys download the show later on. And for that, of course, we are eternally thankful. And we've made a deal with you guys that if you write us an iTunes review, we are going to read it on the show. And this week, we actually have two new ones.
Two new ones
from people who... So listen, the first iTunes review comes from someone who actually named themselves a.real.fan, which cool. I think is really cool. Yeah,
very
I like that
cool.
a lot. And they spelled real right. And they say, can't get enough. They say, it makes my day... This is so awesome. It makes my day every time I come across a new podcast upload of Real Blend. I love listening to these three gentlemen discuss movies in such a casual yet articulate way. Every time I listen, I can't wait to hear their reviews and in-depth discussion on the weekly movie topic and movie news. It's truly a highlight of my week to listen to these guys be as passionate about movies as I am. Keep it up.
That's Jake, really nice.
Isn't that really awesome? And that reminds me of something one of your friends said too, who they said, like, they text you and use our podcast to, like, walk to work, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. A buddy of mine, Chase, Kevin knows him. He lives in New York. He works for Nickelodeon. I've known him for many, 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 many years. We went to high school together. Yeah, he just started listening to us on the way to work. And it's funny because, you know, he might be one or two episodes behind. So randomly, he'll either text me and be like, hey, remember that thing you said about this? You're an idiot. Or like, hey, remember that? Like, oh, I can't believe Sean believes this. Or I can't believe Kevin believes it. You know, so yeah. So as he's walking into Times Square, we're being listened to.
Chase is a really good guy. And he shares our passion. Yeah, Chase and I bonded a lot over film scores. He's a big into film scores. And he, I met him through Jake, obviously. Jake's known him for a long time. But like we have a little chain that we've texted on before in the past, and like he's big into movies. So anytime I'm in New York, with Jake specifically, we try and see him. So
well, our second review comes from someone named C Freezy number 11.
That's cool. Me.
That's Kevin.
All of these are just actually Kevin.
Call me.
Well, this one might be because it ends in a certain way.
It
says,
God.
New favorite podcast. I've followed Kevin for a few years, and I love his Twitter. So if this is Kevin following Kevin, that would be really strange.
Yeah.
And then I started listening to the pod, and I've listened to three quarters of them this week. Love how passionate they are about this stuff. And then he ends with, or she, C. Freezy 11 ends with Dunkirk, which I thought was tremendous.
Yes.
Which is the only way to end anything.
What's great is, and I don't want to sit here, you know, continuously patting ourselves on the back, but like what I try to stress to people is what we're doing is essentially what the three of us have always done, especially in a text message thread, or if we're ever lucky enough to be on the same junket together, is just shoot the bull about movies. Like we're not really going out of our way to do anything different other than setting a specific time in which we're all getting together to do it. But other than that, we're not doing anything, I don't want to say not special, but like this is what we do.
Don't undersell it.
That's the best part about it because I don't know where he came from, but that's the best part about the podcast, in my personal opinion, is that like we get to just talk like we're friends and people somehow tune in. I mean, Sean sends us like statistics and how much what's going on in regards to our downloads every week. But like the fact that like an episode may get thousands of downloads and they're just listening to three guys talk about movies, that's cool.
Yeah, I just, for people that are listening at a later date and not watching us live right now, you're missing out because Kevin's dog Oscar just casually like poked his head into frame.
And then waved. Hello. So I have to believe that Lauren is there or else Oscar is an awesome and wonderfully trained dog.
And now my dog's getting jealous because she heard me talking in my puppy voice. Come here, Daenerys.
All right. This week, as Kevin just mentioned, and literally minutes ago, saw Mission Impossible Fallout. So we are going to give quick reactions to that film and let him catch up to us. If you want to go back and listen to the podcast where Jake and I and a good friend of ours, Chris Van Vliet, discussed the film in depth after interviewing Tom Cruise. That's last week's episode, number 29. Kevin, I want to be able to give a quick reaction to The Equalizer. I know the embargo hasn't lifted, but maybe we can just sort of briefly talk about it. I want to preview Comic-Con, and then this week's blend game has been very popular on social media. We are going to play hashtag Pfeiffer Blend.
Surprisingly popular. I did not realize how passionate of a fan base Michelle
Huge.
Pfeiffer has.
I'm the same way. Our buddy Juan, who I want to give a shout out to, who is a huge
her number one fan.
I know, Ready Player Juan. I love Juan. But he is honestly, ever since I've known him, he's the biggest Michelle Pfeiffer fan I've ever met. Which is funny because I've never met somebody who's actually a genuine Michelle Pfeiffer fan. You know what
right.
I mean? Because I love her movies, but I have never like met somebody who's that invested in that person's filmography. That's a great thing. It's a unique thing. It makes me happy because he gets very excited about her movies, anything that she's in. She was great in Mother. So shout out to him, and we are going to include his pick because, in my opinion, he's like the ultimate Michelle Pfeiffer fan.
Honestly, it would be like doing the Tom Hanks podcast and not having my pick, or you know, like
exactly,
he was kind of mad. He was kind of mad that we did not ask him to be on this one. And really, what it does, it boils down to, because another thing I want to do is do a quick Comic-Con preview. Is I'm leaving for Comic-Con tomorrow.
Yeah,
and,
you are.
And Gabe is coming with me. Also, producer Gabe is coming too. And the idea of trying to fit a guest in was gonna be rough. Yeah. But
we do love you, Juan.
But I have Juan's. I asked for Juan's pick and his explanation, so you I have it, and I will read it. We just don't have time for him. We just don't have time.
Sorry, Juan.
News. Let's start with news. And I want to start off with Skyscraper bombing at the box office. And I want to get your guys' opinion because we wrote a piece about why people just didn't go to this. Yeah. And I am curious because we've talked about The Rock a number of times and we talked about his films. And to me, my thing is just it's Rock fatigue. He has like six movies out in the last 8 months. You know, is it just enough? Is that what happened?
I don't think he sort of plays the same guy in every single movie. And I don't think he's as, I don't want to say not bankable because obviously his movies do well, but I think that we've been mistaking him having a string of successes with him just being flawless when it comes to the box office. Because remember, it was about this time a year ago that Baywatch bombed at the box office, did even worse than Skyscraper did. So, I mean, he's not infallible. It's just that he's out there, and when he promotes his movies, he promotes hard. And when they do big, you know, after Jumanji, it was just so massive. But he is by no means a guy who is batting 1,000. I mean, well, but, he's batting
Laurie George 300. Laurie George is watching us on the Facebook feed. She said, same movie like San Andreas and Rampage. Yeah, and that's the thing, like, when he powered Rampage to a big opening, I thought he could open anything. But
yeah, but even that wasn't a big opening, was it? I mean, that's a $100-plus million movie that opened in the 30s. Like, is that... And it didn't even cross 100 domestic, did it?
I think it did 400 million worldwide. But still, I mean, I think here's my thing. So I definitely think there's a lot of Dwayne Johnson at the moment overload. Jumanji was December. Then you had Rampage in April. Then Skyscraper in July. The Rock is bigger than he's bigger than life. The guy, I mean, you see him on screen. He's also a very hard person to look past. And not see the Rock, you know what I mean? So I think that there is something to be said about, like, you know, we're seeing the Rock's face again. I do think the Rock's actually a good actor. I think that he
Pain and Gain was great. I wish he would start doing more stuff like Pain and Gain.
Agreed. Pain and Gain. I thought that the Rundown was great. I think he actually listen. I think he makes great movies. Genuinely speaking, I think Fast Five, Six, and 7 and 8, I thought, I love the Fast and Furious movies. I thought when he came into 5.
Tremendous addition.
Changed everything. I love Fast and Furious.
He made them much better. He really did. Yeah.
And this is coming from somebody who saw the first one over 9 times in theaters. And that was only because I worked at the movie theater at the time. And I would just go after work because, you know, when I was 16 years old, Fast and Furious was like the coolest thing ever, man. Like drag racing. It was awesome. But anyways, going back to The Rock for 1 second, he does make interesting movies sometimes that I actually genuinely enjoy. I thought Jumanji was fun.
Sure.
I think that I didn't see Skyscraper, so I can't speak on it from a critical standpoint yet because I was on vacation. But I saw someone tweet him the other day and said, why does The Rock keep playing the same role?
Yeah.
And I loved his response because he's 100% right. This guy is an amputee, a veteran. The character he played in Jumanji was a 16-year-old nerd trapped in a muscular guy's body. He definitely has range. So I don't think that the criticism of the same role thing is a right thing to say. I do think there's 2 reasons why I don't think it performed well. One, a little bit of Rock fatigue. 2, I think it was too heavily focused on international markets. Did you feel that I almost felt like the promotion behind that film felt outside of the U.S.
We know inside baseball for a second, he didn't do any domestic press. We were maybe in talks to interview him for that, but we would have had to have gone to Hong Kong for it, and they end up scrapping it. Is it possible that it wasn't tracking well domestic, so they said, let's just push hard for international?
Yeah. Well, I'll say this. He is shooting Jungle Cruise, I believe, at the moment. So yes. I think the timing of the interviews and him being there, I understand why certain press or certain levels of press may or may not have been there. I just think that based on that press tour via his Instagram, it was very international.
But keep in mind, studios pay for that too. There was a story that came out that's a part of his contract. I think they have to pay him $1 million or $2 million more to promote the movie on social media. And if they don't, then he won't say a word about it.
I think that starts with Red Notice, which is the next movie he's doing with Rawson, the director who did Skyscraper. Don't quote me, but I remember reading a story that he was going to get $1 million for his Instagram account alone.
Let me ask you a question. Does that director get fired? Is he still going to do it?
Rawson's actually, I think he's a talented filmmaker. First of all, I haven't seen Skyscraper, but I thought Central Intelligence was great. I thought that, to me, that's another great movie, in my opinion, where The Rock had range. That was a great role for him. It was funny, it was comedic, but it was different. So I think Rawson's a good filmmaker. I think that, he'll 100% continue with Red Notice. Gal Gadot's going to be in that one, too. I just think that we needed a bit of a break. Rampage just hit 3 months ago.
The Skyscraper marketing campaign started and ended with the leap from the crane.
Yes.
That's the only thing they showed in everything. The poster, the trailers, the commercials. It was always him climbing up the crane and jumping. And I was like, I feel like that's the only thing the movie feels confident in showing people.
I mean,
and also, didn't that poster remind you of, and we've talked about this before, like that poster of like him like hanging onto the ledge and it's like Dwayne Johnson in Skyscraper. Didn't it remind you of like, in movies, whenever they have movie posters and they have to just come up with like a generic actor's face on a generic title, that's what it reminded me of. That it would be like in the background of a scene in a movie.
Right. And the thing about the movie that I haven't seen it, but I do respect the idea of the, what they were trying to do with it, the amputee element of it. I think that there's interesting things that were utilized there for promotional aspects that could have been very good. I just thought it was the timing of it in the middle of the summer. Again, Jumanji, Rampage, all within the past 7 months, and then this. It's just a little too much. And again, I think that maybe if this movie was released later this year or marketed differently. Again, we'll never know these things, but I am finding, and I think you guys can all attest to this, that studios now know that international is kind of it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
And I think the problem sometimes is that almost domestic is now getting a little bit back burner. Because if you look up the box office total for Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
They always do way because it didn't even do 200 domestic. I think it did 185 domestic.
Right.
But it did.
Look at international.
Gabe is checking.
Look at Look at Ready Player One.
Several, yeah, Ready Player One.
Ready Player One was about 120 domestic. Now, I would argue that the movie did well domestically because it was heavily promoted and well in the United States,
yeah,
press wise.
Right. I consider like 135 a win for a movie with such a high concept. And I'd argue, considering that this is our job to do it, a hard movie to describe to people. Yeah. Like 135 is impressive.
Yeah, I just think that with Rogue, like a lot of these movies, and there's also movies that bomb miserably in the United States and then crush internationally.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes we've gotten sequels and we go, look at Pacific Rim. Why did we get a sequel to that? Yeah, because
Triple X 2. Right. Yeah. So it's,
but The Rock cannot be happy with a third place opening. That's my point.
No, he's got, I'd argue, a little bit of an ego to him, and he gets, I find, a little pissy on social media if people start kind of calling him out.
I think the thing
that was Jake Hamilton, Rock. That was Jake Hamilton.
That was not
Cinema Blend loves you, Rock.
But hey, if you follow me on social media, you know I do too. So
Rock,
hey,
I
will say one thing. I think that in regards to your question, Sean, to answer it shortly.
Yes.
I think a second number two opening slot would have been a better. The problem is he lost to a movie that already came out a week ago.
Yeah.
So Hotel Transylvania makes sense. It's a kid's movie. It's you know, I get that why that would beat Skyscraper.
Yeah. It's been a month since we've gotten a kid's movie. Like, right. Incredibles is dying down.
But but your movie opening less than Ant-Man on its second weekend now,
that hurts.
I guess that makes sense. It's Marvel, but it lost by a very small margin. I think it was like 3 million.
Yeah.
So that's probably what hurt the most.
Rogue Nation, 195 domestic, 682 worldwide.
Wow.
I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
We will get to Fallout in a minute, too. Let's talk about the Aquaman poster, which I dropped it to you guys and was all ready to defend it. And before I could even get anything into the text chain, you guys were like, what is this piece of trash?
What are those?
What don't you like about it? What don't you like about it?
Well, it looks Finding Nemo. It looks like the Finding Nemo poster. and I can't take credit for that joke. I saw people memeing the hell out of that poster, and it was like, but it is, look at the Finding Nemo poster.
Dude, it looks like a 90s Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper. Like, it should be sort of, it should be like reflective, and I feel like there should be like unicorns. I just think it looks horrible. He's not wet. He's dry.
Yeah. Well, James Wan answered why. I can't remember what he said. He responded to something.
When your body underwater, it doesn't look wet. It doesn't have a wet consistency shiny consistency. It still looks somewhat normal. Because next time
you're
in a pool,
shouldn't your hair be moving though? That's the thing.
His hair should probably be moving, and he probably shouldn't be wearing leather pants. I know that James Wan commented on leather pants too, and his reply was basically, "He's Jason freaking Momoa. You're going to put him in leather pants."
Here's what I'll say. I'm rooting for James Wan.
Yes.
I think James Wan's been dealt a bad hand here in regards to the DC universe, in regards to what's happened with the previous films. Even though I still like Justice League, and I don't know why. I don't think it deserved all the hate it got. I think Sean, you're with me on that too.
Okay, so I rewatched it with the boys, and what I will say is, it's not as bad as I remembered it.
No,
and I have a little bit better of appreciation for it because some of the things that I just like made fun of the first time through, I was like, oh, now I kind of understand. I still think Steppenwolf is a terrible villain. And there's no way that this should be their Justice League movie. Like, if this is your Justice League movie, it has to be a home run. This is like a ground rule double where, like, the shortstop bobbled it a little bit and the runner got on base.
And I actually like Justice League, but it came on TV the other day, and I said this in my initial review. The opening credits and song are
awful.
Horrendous.
Awful. Awful.
And you don't need the Henry Cavill cell phone footage. There was first of all, it was the first thing we saw, and there was no need for it, and it completely showed that his mustache was removed, and it was very, very, I don't get
I'm gonna
what
argue
there.
It is the worst opening credit sequence to a movie that I can recall, because the song is the most depressing song in the world, when it should be a celebratory, like, this is Justice League, let's go! Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm so sorry, or whatever the song is, it's horrendous.
Because remember how good the opening credits scene for Watchmen was?
Yes!
And I feel like he wanted to replicate that. And what was it? It was to a Bob Dylan song, The Times They Are A-Changin'.
Watchmen is an underrated masterpiece.
Watchmen is probably a top five superhero movie for me.
Yeah.
That movie blew my mind. Okay. And but we're quick on the James
Aquaman.
Wan thing.
Yeah, back to Aquaman. Because I think Wan, I think that this could be a Patty Jenkins level standalone movie.
Listen, no. I do think it's going to be really good. I just don't think it's going to do well. So here's my thing. So James Wan, I love his story. I think that Furious 7 was, no wait, did he do 7 or 8?
He did 7. Yeah. With that Paul Walker, he lost Paul Walker in the middle of shooting.
Furious 7 is my favorite Fast and the Furious movie. I still think the Paul Walker split shot with Vin Diesel is just so perfect.
At the end?
But where they're side by side? When they split off. Yeah, remember? Oh, yeah. They
I actually like that song.
And then James Wan, I think they took a shot from an older Fast and Furious film and dropped him into that car, I guess, from what I understand. Paul Walker. But anyways, so James Wan, you know, I love his story. I love the Saw, his whole Saw storyline. Kind of
Conjuring
movies
are great.
Yeah.
Conjuring movies are some of the most well shot horror films ever. Yeah. Oh my God. Conjuring 2, the way he went through windows, like just the fluidity of his camera movements. So I'm rooting for him. I just think that there's a lot of negativity going into this. It's a weird release date. I think it's, what is it, December? It feels like
I just think that character is so stupid.
Nobody wants like, that movie.
Like,
that's
and like
problem.
I get that like Jason Momoa is cool and like, you know, like isn't it cool that we've taken a character that was blonde and like kind of preppy and now we've made him like this like, you know, Khal Drogo badass, but like okay, the novelty's worn off cuz we got Justice League. Now we're just back to Aquaman being stupid.
Well, I'll say this about the footage that we saw in CinemaCon, and there's going to be a trailer on Saturday during the Warner Brothers panel that'll drop online shortly after this. And we haven't seen a trailer yet for this. It's the first footage.
We're about to get a ton of trailers.
I know that James Wan wants this to be a Game of Thrones type epic scale where Atlantis is this monumental place and the action is on a grand scale. And if he's able to deliver, it's going to be fantastic. And he talks as a reference point to using Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner for Romancing the Stone, which is great. If he can nail that tone, fantastic. I'm totally on board. But the trailer, yeah, that drops this weekend is going to tell us a lot about where
it is. I have a feeling, based on what we're discussing right now, that the movie's going to be really good. It's just not going to perform. I'm a little concerned about that aspect of it. Also, that poster was very bad.
Yeah.
And I think Momoa, there was nothing in Justice League about Aquaman that made me say I want an Aquaman movie. So I think it's a movie that no one really wants, but I'm very curious to see what he does. I'm actually very curious about the gladiator underwater battles.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see how those pan out. So.
I want the James Cameron Aquaman movie from Entourage. Did you guys ever watch Entourage?
Yes. I would pay so much money for that. I think I actually asked Cameron if he'll ever, you know what, I did ask him, and I interviewed him for the first Avatar. I said to him, will you make an Aquaman movie? And he goes, have you ever read those comics? Like in a bad way. He was like, they're really bad. So I'll never forget that.
Kevin, pull up your phone and show everybody on Facebook, and then we will find a way to show it later, your picture with Christian Slater. Kevin got to meet Christian Slater.
This is so amazing. This isn't the first time you've met him, is it?
No, I met him. I'll tell you guys the whole story.
This is the photograph.
And you guys have to realize that Kevin's favorite movie of all time is True Romance. And he and Lauren, his wife, have done a number of amazing True Romance themed things. And now you've met both Patricia Arquette and Christian Slater and discussed your love of this movie. So please just tell us how today went down briefly and you got the Elvis sunglasses on his face.
I got some cool stories, by the way, not even from him, but Glenn Close told me some cool stories about True Romance as well today. So, because she was with him for the interview.
I know it had a big cast.
No, she's not in True Romance, but she had
played
dinner with
Christopher Walken in True Romance.
She had dinner with Christopher Walken the night he shot the classic scene between
Get out of here! Yeah. That's
what
crazy!
What are the chances of that?
All right. So, well, she said it was the night or the night after. It was literally right during.
Does she think it's Tarantino's best monologue?
I didn't get into that, but Slater did confirm that the line that I don't know if I should say it on the air because I don't know if I think it's an offensive line. It's the last thing that he calls Hopper before he kills him. Remember that after the speech he calls him. It starts with an E.
Yes.
Okay. That was an improv line. I think that's pretty much well known though by now. All right. So here's what happened. So two things. One, Christian's. So my wife and I dress up as Clarence in Alabama. We've done it a couple times for Halloween. We've been to actual True Romance Fest, which is in California. We went to the Safari Inn where they shot the exteriors for the famous Safari Inn sequence. That's awesome. Which is actually the setting of probably one of the most brutally violent scenes I've ever seen in a movie, when Gandolfini beats up Arquette's character, which is a hard scene to watch. But that being said, you mentioned it's my favorite movie. It's weird because my life has, I've had two levels of favorite movies. I've had my Terminator 2, which was when I was 8 years old, which completely changed my life and turned me into the, you know, film critic and the movie lover that I am right now. And then True Romance was my high school film that kind of drew me into Tarantino. So I put both of them on the same playing field. So Christian Slater I met three times. First time was Critics' Choice Awards. We got a picture with him. My buddy Jim, who works here in D.C., made a joke to him about my wife and I getting married. We weren't married yet. We were engaged. And Slater said, "Oh, I should officiate their wedding," jokingly. Jim then told me this. I thought he was serious. I actually emailed trying to get Christian Slater to officiate my wedding. But apparently he was just joking. I never got a response. Anyway, so fast forward a year later, I'm at the Critics' Choice Awards again. I'm sitting at, I don't know how I got these seats, but I was at the Deadpool table with Ryan Reynolds. So we were right at
the front. If anyone deserved those seats, it was you.
It was cool. We were at the front of the stage. So right where the steps where people walk up when they win their award. So Christian Slater comes out. This is a year later. He's on stage with somebody super famous. I can't remember who it was at the moment.
It's like Mr. Robot? Did he win for Mr. Robot or something?
No. He was out there to present an award.
Oh.
So he's on stage and they toss to the package of the nominees. You know how they say, here are the nominees.
Yeah.
During that, he looks down, he sees me and Lauren, and he mouths to us, "Did you guys get married yet?" Like, cool. He remembered from a year. So fast forward.
I love hearing stuff like that.
It's so cool. And today, I still don't know if it was the right decision. I mean, he was cool with it. I got back from covering the All-Star game here in DC, the All-Star Fan Fest, and I was wearing, like, you know, this outfit right here, and I immediately changed into my Clarence Worley outfit, which is the outfit he wears in True Romance. So it's basically light jeans, white t-shirt, Magnum PI style Hawaiian shirt, golden Elvis glasses. I have the suede shoes he has, everything down to a T. So I decided that, and I was going to greet him at the front door in Clarence Worley's outfit. So I basically walked through the security door, and like everybody there was like really happy. He was like really happy. I have video of him saying, "That's really, really cool. Thank you for doing that." Then we went inside, we took a picture together, and I asked him if he would wear the golden glasses. So if people who haven't seen True Romance, Clarence is a big Elvis fan, like very, very big, like to the point where I think he even admits that he would have intercourse with him at some point. I think he says that in the beginning of the movie. He says, like, he's joking around. So I asked him to put the glasses on. He put the glasses on for the picture. So he's wearing the golden glasses. Craziest thing about that was after we were done, I think he was like, he hadn't worn those glasses in a long time, so he kept them on for a while. He went back to the green room. He put them on again. He was, like, so, like, into the glasses. And then Glenn Close, who was walking with us, we were talking about whether or not she had seen True Romance. And she was like, "Oh, yeah, when Chris Walken had shot that famous scene, I had dinner with him the night of or the night after," whatever. I can't remember her exact wording because I was in a weird bubble where I'm, like, dressed up as Clarence Worley while I'm sitting next to the guy who plays him, which is crazy. So then we're just like, I think I told him something he didn't even know. I don't even think he knew that Tarantino had given the script to Tony Scott so that he could make Reservoir Dogs. Because when I interviewed Quentin Tarantino for Grindhouse, I had one of the radio hosts from the Junkies ask Tarantino if he regretted not directing True Romance. He said, no, you know, I passed my time on that. I gave it to Tony Scott so I could make my first movie, which was Reservoir Dogs, and then I wanted to move on to Pulp Fiction. So it's an interesting, it was crazy. It was absolutely insane. So it was
on a similar note, next Saturday, I have an opportunity to do something, and I'm probably not doing it. I told Jake about this, but they're doing a Die Hard 30th anniversary screening of the movie at Nakatomi Plaza in L.A.
Dude. Oh, my God.
Outside. Dude. But then earlier in the day, they're inviting a few outlets to take a tour of the building and go see, like, select locations where they shot the stuff for Nakatomi. And Die Hard, to me, is True Romance to Kevin. So
is it this coming Saturday or next Saturday?
Next Saturday. So dude, it would be like
both
the
Kevin and I
after.
Will be in LA. You could stay with us, man. You could have a room.
You totally could. And by the way, I am gonna clarify.
Oh, he's thinking about it. Look at his face.
No,
the
really
wheels are turning. Really?
But
like, we'll
just,
be doing
like,
junkets.
What sets
but like,
are they going to show? Like, the only thing is if people go to the roof and can like just see like the view from the roof, like that would drive me nuts. Because everything else is a set. Like all of the office buildings are sets. Like you'd probably go through the stairwell. They're not going to take us into the elevator shafts, but maybe if they go to the roof, I just want to be able to mimic his line from the roof where he's talking to the police officers about ordering a pizza.
That would be awesome.
I won't use that. So I don't, maybe I'll go. I don't know.
Should do it.
Seriously, you got a room to cast. We'll be there. This is probably a conversation to have off the podcast, but we'll be there Thursday to Sunday.
All right. That's awesome.
Oddly enough, the weirdest thing for me today was hearing Glenn Close call Christopher Walken Chris. I had dinner with Chris.
Chris Walken.
Like, what? I mean, it was like, and I've never met Christopher Walken, so it was it was one of those things where I was like, oh my God, it's so cool. But like Glenn Close, so then I asked her if she had ever had anybody dress up in one of her characters, and she said that when she was nominated for Fatal Attraction, she would see people with the hair that her character had in that particular film.
That's weird.
I will clarify, because my wife, Lauren, probably has a better recollection of things that were said today, because I was in such a daze, because I was, you know, I was like, it was a very surreal thing, like walking next to him, wear that outfit. But I'm pretty sure she said she had dinner with him the night of or the night after he shot that famous scene across from Dennis Hopper. And then in the middle of the interview, this is where it got real. It was surreal. I asked him, I did the whole interview for this movie called The Wife, which is the movie that him and Glenn Close are in, which is coming out in August, I believe, with Jonathan Pryce. And at the end of the interview, I looked at Christian Slater. I changed back into a suit for the interview, obviously. And I said to him, while I have you on camera, can I ask you a quick True Romance question? What was your experience like with that movie? You know, do you have a favorite particular moment? And he talked a lot about Dennis Hopper. Mm-hmm. And apparently, he had just seen Easy Rider right before they made True Romance. So it was like, it was a big deal for him to be in a scene with Dennis Hopper. So it was just like, you know, speaking of Dennis Hopper, who's passed away, obviously, unfortunately, but just cool to hear him recollect about that genius actor. And
that's awesome.
If people haven't seen True Romance, seek it out, because the Hopper walk-in dialogue is arguably one of the greatest scenes in the history
of
cinema.
It's the best monologue best dialogue that you can't quote openly in public.
There's not a moment in that dialogue, except for when Walken goes, do you know who I am? He goes, I'm the Antichrist. He goes, you tell the angels in heaven you've never seen evil so singularly personified as you did in the face of the man that killed you. My name's Vincent Cicotti. I work for Consul for Blue Lube Oil. I know the whole speech,
wow,
but
I'm sure you do.
But think about how brutal that line is. Tell the angels in heaven you've never seen evil so singularly personified as you did in the face of the man that killed you.
I love it.
Woo!
Go to Kevin's socials and take a look at the picture that he has of Christian Slater, because it's really great.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week on Real Blend.
Sorry.
Comic-Con is happening in a couple of days.
Comic-Con!
And Jake, you've been a long time ago. Kevin, have you ever gone?
Yeah.
Never been. I want to go, but I want the experience to be great. I've heard horror stories about the how crazy it can get, but I'd like to go if I was able to have credentials or some type of pass to get into the Hall H.
This is the only way for Comic-Con to your experience to be truly great is to not go and read about it from a distance.
I went 10 years ago, and I've been told that that was one of the last years before, I don't want to say the last years that it was good, but the last years before it truly got crazy. The Dark Knight had just come out. The big movie in Hall H was Watchmen that we were seeing the trailers of.
Here's what I'll say about Comic-Con. It reminds me every year of just how important all of this is to people who have, mundane jobs, who use movies and television as an escape from the true 9-to-5, right? So for this, they use vacation time. They dress up in costume. This is their time to just be surrounded. So all of us, like talk about the three of us, our days are immersed in this thing that we love, right? But for a lot of people, they can't do that, right? They can, that so their escape is to plunge into these television shows that they adore, Fear the Walking Dead, Walking Dead, to go to the to talk to the different movies. And then sometimes they get up to the microphone and they're able to ask a question of somebody who they will like. I saw a woman break down crying at the Elysium panel, not because she watched Elysium, but because she
I like that movie.
Of course you do. Because she got to ask Matt Damon a question. And she asked Matt Damon a question, and then she literally was like, I can't believe I just spoke to Matt Damon, and started crying. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, I totally remember that that for the for people who don't get to do this, it's a really amazing opportunity. You know, but the fest can't handle the amount of people who go. That's the only thing, is they can't handle the crowds who go.
To say something about my wife real fast, which I found this interesting. Some Lauren is also a movie critic in DC, and she gets to tag along with me on a lot of the things that I do in regards to meeting a lot of people and celebrities that we both love together, like the Christian Slater thing today. But she'll still go to these cons to try and talk to people that she has never met before. Mm-hmm. I remember she went to a New York Comic Con just so she could be in the same room as Sarah Michelle Gellar. Mm-hmm. And she had the opportunity to somehow stand up and ask her a question. And it just changed, like, it made her so happy. So what you're saying, I completely get. And it's one of those things where we are very lucky that we have the opportunity to sit in a room one-on-one with these people. And Jake and I discuss this a lot in regards to a junket scenario versus a red carpet scenario, where you have the opportunity to be face-to-face, one-on-one with somebody. So I get what you're saying, man. Like, there's... That makes sense to me.
But where it's broken is that some people will spend 24 hours in a line to maybe not even get into the panel that they want to get into. And that's
even I did that a little over a year ago. I did not get credentialed. I just went with buddies to Star Wars Celebration in Orlando. Sean, you were there. And for the 40th anniversary panel, I just knew they were all going to be on the same stage together. And I thought, this could be the last time that this ever happens in our lifetime. Right. Right. And I slept overnight. And I slept overnight with my buddies, and we were, I kid you not, this is not an exaggeration to make the story more dramatic, we were the last people to be allowed into the room. And then when they're all on the same stage, and you're looking at Harrison Ford and George Lucas and Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels and Peter Mayhew, and then John Williams starts playing, I thought that was absolutely worth it. It was a once in a lifetime opportunity.
And there's definitely something that happens at Comic-Con every single year where you're like, oh yeah, this is why. We'd like the year that J.J. Abrams had the episode, the Force Awakens panel in Hall H. And then at the end he goes, does everybody want to go watch a concert of Star Wars music? Let's all get up and march there together. And
poor Kevin Smith. Wasn't Kevin Smith next? Wasn't this panel next?
It was right after that. And he watched the whole hall empty. But like, I marched in a line of thousands of people in an organized line to go to this concert. And I was like, this truly is why Comic-Con is special. But this year it's, so the Warner Brothers panel, which we discussed with Aquaman, they're going to have Shazam, potentially some Wonder Woman 1984 footage. I would assume that Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins shot something to bring. Sony is going to have Venom and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Again, it's a lot of movies that showed footage. Universal is going to have Glass and Halloween.
Glass, I'm so excited for Glass.
Glass is actually a great movie to bring there, considering the superhero element to it, which is... It's because it seems like a movie like Unbreakable and Split, while the superhero undertone is there. It seems like a strange movie to bring to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
But now that we know everything's interwoven, and that poster, I think it was Jake and I and you were talking about that poster where, like, I guess the image was reversed of their superhero. What was it again?
Yeah. The reflections are them as their superhero personas.
So cool. That movie is going to be
Shyamalan awesome. Is back, baby.
He never left.
Well, I agree with you.
Might have left for a little. Or than he should have.
What about defend Lady in the Water forever.
What about Fox's Predator panel? Are you excited for Shane Black? New Predator?
Maybe in 1984.
Yeah.
I'm not really on the Predator bandwagon yet. I don't feel that movie. And I like Shane Black a lot. I will say I did not. And I know people are going to blast me for this. I did not love The Nice Guys. I thought it was good.
I agree with you. No, I agree with you. I do love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
I do too. But I did not love Nice Guys.
But I don't think none of that's going to transfer over. They're all completely different films.
Totally.
Like Nice Guys and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I could see saying, oh, I liked one, therefore I'm going to get excited for the other. But right. I can't see anything in either of those two movies that are going to make it to their way over to Predator.
Which is why I like the jump from James Wan going into this Aquaman film, yeah, because I think it gives a chance for him to break away from the horror element. I mean, Fast and Furious was a big thing for him. But yeah, Sean,
I am scared to see it.
That's Sean's going to be there, and people need to follow. So people listening, follow Sean's Twitter because he will be live tweeting everything. But Sean, what is your most anticipated panel?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It's probably the Warner Brothers panel, because this year, like every year, my most anticipated panel is the Marvel panel, and it's always Saturday night, and they always put on such an amazing presentation, and they always have something really cool to talk about. This year, it happens to land in a time where the three Marvel movies have played out. They don't have anything until Captain Marvel, so it's way too early for them to show some stuff for March. So Warner Brothers has an opportunity, and DC has an opportunity to really steal the spotlight, to come in and drop some amazing Aquaman footage, or maybe a Shazam sizzle reel that gets people really excited. So I'm very excited for that. I want Venom to turn around and convince me that it's going to be good. I like Tom Hardy. I want that character to work. And the first footage, I think because they were still working on the effect of the creature, needed some time. So hopefully now they're ready. But
Sean, do you think we're not going to get any Captain Marvel stuff?
No, I don't think so. Nothing from Game of Thrones. No.
I bet you Captain Marvel surprises with some footage.
But like the whole studio of Marvel isn't going to be there, right? It'd be one thing if like Marvel is going to be there, but like aren't they just straight up not going to be there at all?
They're sitting the whole thing out, and what I think they're going to do. See, they said after Infinity War, after they did the junket, that the main players for the Marvel Studios were going to go into total radio silence and not do any press. Now Kevin Feige just did the junket for Ant-Man and the Wasp, and he talked a bit about some big picture things, because now the Spider-Man Far From Home stuff is starting to come out and people are asking questions like, how can he be in it? He dusted in Infinity War. So, I think they want to try to avoid press as much as they physically can. And a couple of years ago, Marvel did a presentation in the El Capitan in downtown Hollywood, where they laid out all of Phase 3 in one shot. And it was Marvel saying, we don't need to go to Comic-Con and we don't have to have a D23. We can just do a Marvel thing that we want to do. And they literally put it together in a couple of days and invited a bunch of press outlets. And they let fans in the LA area come. And Kevin Feige came out and just said, here's Phase 3. And they mapped it all out on a giant slide. And I bet you they do something like that in the back half of this year for all of their Phase 4 titles. If they even want to reveal them, they might not. But I think Marvel knows what their entire Phase 4 slate is. And they'll just choose to reveal it when they want to reveal it.
I think, listen, Comic-Con sounds awesome, and I agree with you. I like following it from my phone and my Twitter. When Jake talked about what it was like to be in that Star Wars room, that's what you wait for. And I think these big moments that you get to share with people for the first time that no one else is able to experience, it's like going to like a world premiere, you know what I mean? Like nobody's seen this footage yet, or nobody's seen this yet.
And there's also a camaraderie, like you're hugging strangers, you're hugging people that haven't showered in 3 days, and it's cool because you're experiencing something. It's that being said, I have no interest in going back to Comic-Con, nor do I have interest in going back to Star Wars Celebration, and if it weren't happening in Chicago next year, I probably wouldn't go.
We're gonna do a show from there. I'm telling you, we're going to do a show from there. I would like to do a podcast from Celebration. We're going to get Kevin to Chicago. Yes, Kevin.
Can I make one question/derailment real quick? And then I promise this will be fast because I
experienced
Gabe's freaking out.
No, absolutely.
I experienced this
Gabe
a little bit.
Gabe stopped listening 20 minutes ago.
I experienced this over the weekend a little bit on my Twitter, and I wanted to get your opinions on this.
Yes.
I was watching a lot of Die Hard this weekend because it was on HBO. Like they were running a marathon.
Oh, I will allow this. Yes.
And I know you would.
Were they running them because of the Bruce Willis roast over the weekend?
The anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the movie was
Sunday. Oh, you're right. You're right. Sunday. That's probably what
I didn't know this, but it shares an anniversary with True Lies in regards to the date they were released. True Lies is one of my favorite movies, but Die Hard, I caught the end of Die Hard, and I wanted to say, well, kind of going back to what Sean was saying about going to Nakatomi Plaza, Sean, I do recommend, since it is your favorite movie, I would try and do what that is. It sounds cool.
It does.
But the Alan Rickman death scene is truly extraordinary, that it was 30 years ago and it looks that good. And I was two things I wanted to bring up about that. One, The thing Jake tweeted me, I know Gabe's probably getting mad, but I'll take 2 seconds here. I know you guys are all texting saying Kevin's going over time. I know. I see you guys all go, I see all your faces. There's a separate text chain with you three, and it's like Kevin's going over time. He's talking too long.
What's amazing is that that's not right at all, but I love it. I love that you just assumed that we're texting about you.
So well, that's the Rickman fall. The Rickman
you all
fall.
Had your phones in your hands at the exact same time. So, so that's the reason why I said that. All right, anyways, so the Rickman fall. Two things on that. One, Jake, talk about what you said to me about where what you heard. And two, someone sent me a video of a similar scene in RoboCop when the guy falls off the building after being shot. And it looks horrendous. So yes. There's something to be said about what McTiernan did with that shot. Whether it be at nighttime or how they green screened it, but it looks phenomenal. But Jake, what this is an interesting thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
if
I don't know if it's true. It's just a story that I heard that whenever they were holding Rickman, they're like, okay, you know, they had to get that shot of him falling, and like we're gonna let you go on three, and they said 1, 2, and then they let him go. So that in order to achieve that oh crap face that he has whenever he's falling, I don't know if it's true, but that's just what I always heard.
But you're not the only person who told me that. I got other tweets of people saying that. Did Rickman ever confirm that? Or the screenwriter confirm that?
I don't know. I'm sure a little bit of digging could find the answer. But I feel like it's...
I love
it's
it. I think that's great.
It's a great story.
Yeah, but this is why I really transitioned. Because Bruce Willis is 100% wrong about what he said about Die Hard. And I want Sean to tell this story because you wrote an article about it. Yeah. About it, whether or not it's a certain holiday movie.
Well, at the end of the roast, so it's an ongoing debate about whether this is a Christmas movie or not, or if it just happens to be a movie that takes place at Christmas. But I mean, my argument is that it's a Christmas movie.
It
110%.
Is.
Yeah. It uses...
How is it not? How is it not a Christmas
movie? It's about family. Extremely
it's famous
on Christmas.
Christmas music.
Yes.
I mean, anytime I hear... the Die Hard theme, you know, at Christmas time, I always turn around and whisper to my kids to the point where they can't stand it anymore. I'm like, you know, this is the Die Hard theme. And they're like, shut up, old man. I can't listen to you talk about this movie anymore.
It's
for
a
God's
Christmas
sakes.
Movie.
It's a Christmas movie. But Willis, for whatever reason, decides to close his Comedy Central roast by shouting out to the crowd, Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. And then the screenwriter and I'm sure McTiernan would also come out and say, it's a Christmas movie. Stop it. Stop.
To be fair, Bruce Willis also said that Die Hard 5 was a good movie. So do we really believe what he says about Die Hard?
No one has said that ever. And if he did say that, we'll have to check him into a psychiatric ward. Because
maybe that's the plot of Glass.
Yeah. Tweet us. Yeah. Tweet us your thoughts. Because yes. I would be very curious what poll would be on that. Because I think it's 100% a Christmas movie. Not only because it takes place at Christmas. It's all about family and love. Getting back to your kid and your wife.
I would argue more that Lethal Weapon has a better is it or isn't it? Because I don't know if that is.
Yeah.
Even though all Shane Black movies
I always
Christmas
forget
time.
About Lethal Weapon. I don't really associate Lethal Weapon with Christmas.
No, neither do I. But Die Hard is such a Christmas movie. Yeah. Very quick Equalizer reactions because I want to spend more time on Mission. Kevin, do you
recommend
it? I
have not seen it, so I'll leave it to you guys.
I liked Equalizer. Two.
Not the first one, the new one.
I like the second one. I saw it last night. Okay. I guess we can't officially review it yet.
Not really, but I just want to let people know whether it's worth their time.
I think it's good. And I think first of all, I think Antoine Fuqua is a great director. I think he's a good storyteller. The action in this film I thought was incredible. There's a car chase scene or an individual car sequence that Sean, you saw. You know what I mean?
That got an applause break from our audience.
But it's funny. My wife and I were driving home last night from the film and... We weren't talking about the action. We were talking about a very emotional dialogue scene that happens between Denzel and the kid, one of the kids from Moonlight, which I won't go into. But it was weird. I was in a theater with a sold out theater, and what Denzel says in this scene was actually very profound, and I didn't expect it in the middle of a like incredibly bloody, violent action movie.
Yeah. He assumes like a father figure role for the kid.
Right. And it's really profound. Like, and people in my theater were clapping. I remember leaving the movie and Lauren brought it up again. I'm like, yeah, you're right. And like people, it's a message that I don't think has been talked a lot about in movies. And what he says to this kid was so interesting. So when people see it, I'm curious what you think. But I was surprised at the emotional attachment I had to that relationship in the middle of a bloody R-rated Denzel revenge movie. So it's, I think it... It's not a great movie by any means. It could have been trimmed down by 20 minutes, probably. There was a storyline, but we'll get into the full review next week, but I do recommend it.
Yeah, and I think if we remember anything about it 2 months from now, it'll be the finale, which is, I think we can say that it's set in a hurricane.
Awesome.
It's set in a hurricane.
That was amazing.
Yeah, and more often than not, I just was watching, like, how on earth did they maintain a hurricane for the amount of time that it would take to film it. So,
I thought the same thing. Yeah. I'm like, what are, like, first of all,
it's a lengthy scene. It's got to be a 15 or 20 minute finale. Oh,
and they're in the middle of like a category 5 hurricane.
Yeah.
And it looks really good. Like, there was a shot I remember, and I won't give too much. This is nothing spoiler or story wise, but like one person walked by a pool that was in someone's yard. And even the effects on that looked amazing. So I don't know what they were doing to make it look so good. I'm sure they had rain machines and things like that. But is that in the trailer? Do they show any of the hurricanes?
They do show clips of the trailer. And I will say, because this was one of my favorite questions from the first Equalizer Junket. I had Denzel and Antoine Fuqua combined. Thank you. And I said, you know, it looked great when you had your Home Depot confrontation. But whose decision was it to have the fire alarms go off? Because it meant Denzel had to be wet all the time. And I said to Denzel, were you okay with that? And he was like, on the first day. He said, by the time we got to the fifth or sixth day, when everybody else was dry and I'm wearing the same wet coat, you know, it got to be a bit of a thing. So, and then he gave his Denzel laugh. And when you're in a room with Denzel and he gives that laugh, it's such a, oh my gosh, I'm sitting across from Denzel. So yes. I got Antoine Fuqua at CinemaCon on the red carpet, and I said, you know, last time you put Denzel into a wet Home Depot, and I said, what did you do to him this time? And he starts laughing, and he goes, well, there's a hurricane.
That's
great,
funny.
Good.
That's
keep torturing
really
him.
By the way, my wife picked up on this, and I won't say anything more than this. I didn't pick up on this at all. There is a major, major Game of Thrones reference in the movie.
Oh, okay.
That's all I'll say.
All right, good. Kevin saw Mission Impossible.
I thought you were going to say there was like a Stones reference.
Fallout.
So Jesus, not again, Kevin.
Kevin saw Fallout. And we are going to wait to talk in depth about Fallout. We talked a bit about it on last week's podcast. I want to sort of give the floor to Kevin. And we're going to, I want to rank them. And I don't think that this is going to give away any sort of spoilers, but where would
you
we want to
rank
Fallout?
All six, or just
let's
say where we put
six.
Fallout?
Let's rank all six. Jake, you start. Where would you put this?
I think it's the best one.
You think it's the best one? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the most complete. I don't dislike any of the Mission Impossibles. I think it's arguably one of the most consistent franchises in the history of movies. That's getting better and better and better. I'd argue these days it's more consistent than Bond is, which I know is not a popular opinion, but I'm going to make that argument. Right. Here's my issue. Here's why I like it more than the other ones. I think it's the most complete. I think it's got these like several different amazing set pieces that are sort of scattered evenly throughout the film perfectly. Whenever I think of the best, most wow sequences from some of the past few films, it's always near the beginning or sometimes in the middle. Like, as much as I love Ghost Protocol, and trust me, I do, I feel like it peaks at the Burj Khalifa scene, and then, like, the final act, it just kind of limps to the finale. Like, there's nothing about the final act that really stands out to me. So, as opposed to, I think, in this movie, they save some of the best for last. So, it is my favorite one of all of them, and if I had to rank them, I'm writing it down right now, I'd go 6, and then I'd go Mission Impossible 3, and then I go Ghost Protocol, and then I go Rogue Nation, and then I go 1, and then I go 2. That being said, I think they're all at least like 3.5 or above. I think it's just a truly monumental and accomplished franchise.
Is it weird that I don't like 1? And I'll say this, I haven't seen 1 in a long time, and I love De Palma. But I didn't love 1. And it plays better,
I think, as you get, because I felt the same way, and I just rewatched all 5 of them before we went to Paris. I feel like, and I don't want to be like, oh, as you get older, you appreciate films, but I feel like I appreciate it, I don't want to say the slowness of it, but I respect the pacing more now than I did whenever I was like 10 years old.
They also became different movies. Like, they're movies that are more, like, from 3 on, they're movies that are defined by their set pieces. And the set piece for 1 is the CIA infiltration, where it's more about, like,
which
what he doesn't do. It's great, right? Yeah. But it's not like a showstopper. Like the big stunt is when he's running away from like a broken fish tank, right?
Yeah.
In one, so it's just like they're not that exciting. Like he's not gonna die.
And also, there are a lot of like weird, like below the chin shot. Like De Palma loves shooting below, like people having conversations. There are a lot of like really dramatic, like underneath the chin shots.
We all agree that two is the worst, right? Everyone agrees that two is the
worst. But it's still fun to watch.
You don't like, think two is the worst?
I hate saying the worst.
Really interesting. All right, that's fine.
I will say I don't want to take too much time for this because I went a little long earlier on my True Romance stuff, so I apologize, but I don't want to take up too much talking time. But I'll rank mine real quick. I know we're gonna get into an in depth discussion next week.
Oh, probably, absolutely. On this, right? Okay. Can we even do in depth? Because it doesn't even open next. It opens next week. I want to give people time to see it. But
okay,
we will have more Fallout talk. Yes.
Okay, I just saw it. Listen, I think these films are amazing. This is a very, very good movie. And anybody who's a Mission Impossible fan is going to like this movie. No question.
That's fair.
My words when I left the theater were, I liked it a lot. I do have problems with it personally that I will get into when we review the movie more heavily. That being said, this is going to sound worse than it is because the rankings make it seem that way, but I think it's the fourth best one. And that sounds harsh, but
that's less of a knock to the movie and more of a testament to the quality of the series.
Well, Kevin, I literally said this to Paramount in the junket suite. I said, your biggest problem is that, you know, 3, 4, and 5 are all timers. Like you're trying to compete with three of the best action movies of the past, you know, of all time. Yeah. Literally of all time. So how do you break through that group?
Yeah. And that's kind of where my line is. So I think Ghost Protocol and Rogue Nation are on a level that is almost, no pun intended, impossible to achieve. Like those movies are, they're perfect. And I think Ghost Protocol blew my mind to a point where, and again, a lot of that has to do with Brad Bird and shooting IMAX film. And that movie on a 70 mil IMAX screen, when he's on that Burj Khalifa, or oh my God, how about the running in the sandstorm? I mean, there is so much in that film.
I agree with Jake's point that the back half, the third act isn't as strong. I would agree with that.
I would say that about Fallout.
Really?
Oh, no. Really?
See, to me, there are two moments in the entire franchise where I get sweaty palms. It's the Burj Khalifa and then the finale of Fallout.
Okay, well, let's get into that. We'll get into that when we talk.
Okay, I have a question then. So sell Rogue Nation to me. Because, like, I really like Rogue Nation, and I liked it upon rewatch. But, like, I mean, like, to me, like, it's
Solomon Lane is a great... Solomon Lane and the Syndicate are a really great villain.
And that pays off more in Fallout than it does in...
Ilsa is a really great addition to the franchise.
And her opera house scene is a masterpiece. Like that scene,
fight in the fight in the rafters at the opera house with Cruz. Oh,
see, I take the bathroom fight. And Cruz, I take the bathroom fight.
He goes,
Sean, that the rafters fight scene.
The rafters fight is tremendous.
Oh my God! Like I'll never forget that. That whole sequence.
Do you guys think that scene is better than the bathroom fight scene in Fallout?
Yes.
No.
But the bathroom fight scene in Fallout is awesome. It's still awesome. An amazing.
Yeah, oh no, we're not trashing anyone. Yeah. But
wait. The I have to dive into the water with the cards. What card do I have?
That's pretty cool.
He dies, he gets revived, it's a car chase, it's a motorcycle chase.
Yeah.
That sequence is insane. Fallout, I mean, Rogue Nation is insane.
Yeah, you gotta think about that for a second. Rogue Nation has three of the greatest action scenes ever. Yes. You have the plane takeoff, which is insane. You have the rafters opera house scene, and then the scene that Sean has mentioned where he holds his breath and then they get out, and that whole car scene. What's that shot where him and Peg are in the car and they're driving backwards or whatever? Oh yes. My God.
And that's
airbag.
Right after Ethan had died and has to get revived. He dies briefly and gets revived. Amazing. Okay, let me get my ranking and then we'll move on, and then because we got to do 5 for Blood.
Okay, I didn't get my ranking.
Go.
All right, so I'm going to, and again, I liked Fallout a lot and I recommend it for Mission fans. It's an amazing
film. For action fans.
Film.
I think for just movie fans in general.
Fallout, for movie fans in general, yeah.
I would even go, it's a very, very good movie. So definitely see it. My rankings are 4, 5, 3, 6, 2, 1.
Interesting. Okay. But like Sean and I were saying before, like, we're talking about, like, at least for me, especially those first four, because we had the same first four just in a different order, we're talking the difference between tenths of a point.
Yes.
So,
yes.
We have different rankings, but, like, but I don't really think we're arguing it with each other.
That's the fun.
My top four, so meaning Fallout, Protocol, Ghost Nation, Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, Fallout, and MI3 are all above a 4 out of 5 for me.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. So just to give a perspective, I like Fallout a lot.
Mine is 4, 5, 6, 3, 1, 2.
Wait,
so 6 is third. 4, 5, 6, 6. 4, 5, 6, 3, 1, 2.
You say Fallout better than MI3?
Yes.
Okay.
And I just rewatched MI3, and I just it's really good. I mean, it's great. I mean, JJ's good in it, and it takes a little while to get going. It takes a little while to get going.
I love 3, primarily because of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, Hoffman.
And bridge blowout scene when he... Oh, my God.
Which I just realized is the Bay Bridge, which we crossed going to Delaware. Did they actually shoot that on the Bay Bridge? It's supposed to be the Bay Bridge.
Oh, wow.
Which has a big Bay Bridge.
I didn't know that. I actually don't remember that being the Bay Bridge. I'll have to go back and watch it.
They mention in the movie that there was an attack on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. Huh. When he's racing to get to the hospital to get to his wife before she can get abducted.
Hmm.
And we just drove over that.
We're in Delaware.
We're in Delaware. All right. Pfeiffer Blend. Today, this week's game is hashtag Pfeiffer Blend, the films of Michelle Pfeiffer. And like we mentioned at the top of the show, it got a tremendous response on social media. Michelle Pfeiffer has amazing fans who are really super passionate about her performances. And it truly, like, I was so happy that we were doing her body of work. And then when I looked back over them, I was like, oh my God, like, she's been in so many great films over the years. I thought, like, my default was like the first one that popped into my head. But then when I looked, I was like, oh man, I'm totally wrong. It's not that at all. And so I shifted. Gabe, are we able to guess? We all have different picks. Good. Excellent. Wow. And Gabe tells me that Jake goes first. And so we get to guess what Jake's pick is. And I am going.
Here's what I'll tell you. I thought it was easy and I had my pick. And then about 2 hours ago, I went, ooh, but maybe not. And I changed my mind at the last minute.
I'm going to guess that you went with something like Dangerous Liaisons.
I'm going to guess he went with Dangerous Minds.
Hmm. I went with Batman Returns.
Oh, man, way off.
Okay. I just think that that is such a big character. And it wasn't even supposed to be her. It was supposed to be Annette Bening, and then Annette Bening got pregnant.
Really?
That is such a big character and such an iconic villain that now she will always be the bar by which it is measured.
Sure.
Like, no, you know, like, before and after, anyone that takes on, in the same way that Heath Ledger did with the Joker, he got a little bit more, I think, publicity for it than she gets for Catwoman, I think. I mean, the transformation that Selina Kyle makes in that movie, just the complete ownership of the character, both internally and externally, what she does physically for the role, what she does internally, just how unbelievably tortured and sad and just sort of removed from society this person is, and how she then transforms into this really empowered, badass woman that can take on both Bruce Wayne and Batman. I mean, she took a role that on page, I think, was probably written to be a lot of fun, and she made it her own in a way that I think not everyone does with a comic book role.
Yeah.
I mean, she took a comic book role and made it an amazing cinematic role, period.
Right.
I was originally going to go with Fabulous Baker Boys, but there's a certain iconic quality to what she turned in with Catwoman and Selina Kyle. And I felt like I'm going to get knocked for picking this, because I feel like it's on paper the easiest one to pick. But I just think what she does with that character is just, it goes into the realm of the word iconic.
I think that's a totally fair pick. I don't think you're going to get lambasted for that at all. I get to go next, and you guys get to guess.
I think you picked Fabulous Baker Boys.
Hmm.
I think you picked Scarface.
No, you're both wrong. I picked Frankie and Johnny.
Ooh.
And I picked Frankie and Johnny for this reason. It's a Gary Marshall movie, and I don't love Gary Marshall's movies. He makes really Well, his most recent movies are just too simple and too basic. But this is a like a quintessential romantic comedy. It does everything right in a romantic comedy. But when I was looking back over Michelle Pfeiffer's body of work, I was amazed at how often she was cast as a character who relies so much on like how beautiful she is, right? Like she's just so stunning. And a lot of times with someone like her, she has to work against that to be convincing. Yeah. And in Frankie and Johnny, she is a normal person. Like it's a remarkable performance as just an average person. She's a diner waitress. She falls in love with a guy who comes in to try out for the short order cook. And it's just a quintessential living in New York. Like it plays the bridge and tunnel aspect of living in New York so beautifully. And what cements it is just her and Pacino. Like you just watch her and Pacino playing off of each other. They're both brilliant in it. And she's funny. She's so funny. And it's
she makes so many other actors better.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, like that movie to me just showed off. It's almost like when, and this is really funny to say, but like when a pretty girl who doesn't know she's pretty, shows off their light and you're like, oh, look at how charming, like she's all of a sudden. So Michelle Pfeiffer in that way had to like relearn how to not be one of the most beautiful people on the planet and then become a normal person who's letting that shine through and still make it look effortless, you know, in the process of performing. And so there's so many great things I think you could have, so many great roles you could have chosen of her, but that she floors me in Frankie and Johnny. And I just think it's a great romantic comedy. So
that's a good pick. That's a really good pick.
Thank you. Thank you. Kevin is up next. And
are we going to guess?
Yeah, we get to guess.
I'm going to say Fabulous Baker Boys because someone had to choose Fabulous Baker Boys.
It's a good choice. I think Hairspray. I think Kevin picked Hairspray.
I like All Hairspray. Right.
It's great.
I'm going to be short because I want to get to Juan's pick. Five for Blend came about when I was on vacation last week. I was away all week. I did not have a ton of time to kind of revisit her movies and or look at some of the movies I had not seen in her list. So my pick, I don't feel 100% about, and I just want to say that I was in between three movies. I was in between What Lies Beneath, Dangerous Minds, and Scarface. Because those are the movies that were freshest in my mind in regards to her specifically. I don't feel that I'm educated enough in her filmography to make this decision yet. So at the moment, I'm going to go with What Lies Beneath because that was just Zemeckis, and it was brilliant. And I remember being so surprised by that film. It's a horrifying experience, a very scary movie. I haven't seen it in years, but I just remember her performance shook me. Like everything about that movie was frightening. But again,
she's a better part of like some bad movies. Like Wolf is a cheesy movie.
But I like Wolf.
Well, you might like it, but it's cheesy and she's in it.
Yeah.
So, it's Nicholson chewing scenery.
Literally in some scenes.
Yeah. Yes. But I do want to say, I don't feel that I'm educated enough in her filmography at this moment to have made the decision based on the movies you guys are referring to and my revisiting of her filmography because I was gone all week. So I'm going to go with What Lies Beneath for now.
Great choice.
And I may ask you guys in the future if I could revisit her just with maybe a different point of view. I don't feel educated enough right now at the moment to give that opinion.
I like this.
Well, props to you for admitting it.
And sooner or later, I want to work on something else that we can do, like to maybe not eventually replace the blend game or maybe do something outside of it where we
replace
come up with like
the blend game.
No, but
I want to try something else where we're like, we establish like a hall of fame, like some type of hall of fame for people and like try to debate like who should be in it or what movie like gets them into it kind of thing. Like criteria of some sort. I don't know. It's an idea in the back of my head.
I'm assuming you're
especially not after we get to this week's assignment, but we're not there yet. Our good friend Juan, who filled in for us or guest hosted with us one time, is obsessed with Michelle Pfeiffer, and he wants me to talk about the fact that like
obsessed.
He's interviewed her a couple of times, and he says he hasn't done anything criminal or over the line, so he's kept his fandom in check.
But you mean he didn't dress up as one of her characters and surprise her?
He did wear a Catwoman outfit to the junket one time, and the studio rep was like, dude, just don't, please don't.
Yeah. Well, weirdly enough, it wasn't even a Michelle Pfeiffer junket.
No, he just had it on handily. So he wrote this out for us. I reached out to him. I said, Juan, if we're doing Pfeiffer Blend, you got to give us your pick. So he writes, and I told him I would read this. Michelle Pfeiffer is one of the few actresses where you could choose almost any of her performances from her filmography and be able to argue that it is her best. Her work in Fabulous Baker Boys and Batman Returns are undeniable highlights. But for me, her best performance as Frankie in 1991's Frankie and Johnny.
Hey.
This is her second film. Hey, so Juan and I win. This is her second film starring alongside Al Pacino and a role that represents how far she had come as an actress since she first worked with him in Scarface. Frankie is a lonely, bruised waitress who has given up on love, and it's a role that Pfeiffer was not supposed to play. Left her own devices, Hollywood would have gladly just used Pfeiffer as another blonde bombshell. The role of Frankie was originated on stage by Kathy Bates.
Oh,
so when the movie was cast, yeah, I thought that's pretty cool. When the movie was cast, the reaction was that Pfeiffer was not suitable for the role, but her performance, graceful, delicate, and heartbreaking, silences any prejudices, shows her incredible range, and allowed her to bare her soul in an incredibly honest and moving way that her star turns have not allowed. For people who want to go back and see, because he writes at the end, her last monologue in Frankie and Johnny remains her career best. If you just want to go watch the whole movie, but if you want to skip like to YouTube and just watch the final monologue where she talks about whether Frankie is afraid that she's never going to find love and she's going to be alone her whole life, it's devastating.
That's don't you well, picture well Juan like sitting at a desk by a window and like yeah. staring off into like through the window as like a tear rolls down his face and he's got like one of those quills, like he's not even writing, he's not even typing this out, he's got like this giant feathered quill that he's writing this testament to Michelle
Pfeiffer. Real Blend fans,
I send you
my thoughts on the filmography of Michelle Pfeiffer.
I got teary-eyed during that. That was this, really well written.
Nice. On this 23rd day of July.
That was
hashtag
really...
Blend of Pfeiffer.
The audience like... pick was Batman Returns.
Cool.
So you know what? Jake wins.
What was second and third? Do we know?
A three-way tie with Frankie and John. Oh, and then nearly a three-way tie. Wait, Gabe, there's only two names there, Gabe. Can't be a three-way tie with two names.
God,
Fabulous
Gabe,
Baker Boys and Frankie and Johnny.
Mm.
I did see some people giving What Lies Beneath some love on social media.
Yes, and there was another one. Oh, some people said Grease 2, but I think they were joking. They can't mean anything really good. All right, next week we will play a blend game. Hashtag Ridley Blend.
Oh!
The films of Sir Ridley Scott.
Oh.
Yes.
Wow.
We're back to directors, and we're going with Sir Ridley.
I forgot we haven't done Ridley. Oh,
directors
man.
Is my, that's
and
my
realm.
And the
reason I
realm.
Use Ridley is because sooner or later we'll use Tony Scott, too, so we don't want to use hashtag Scott right now.
Hannibal it is.
Hashtag
A Sir, good year it
hashtag
is.
Hashtag Ridley or hashtag Sir Ridley?
I already know that Jake's going with Exodus. That's Jake's.
No, I'm a good year all the way.
Jake's doing Exodus.
Where can listeners find you on social media, Jake, please?
You can find me at Jake's Takes.
Kevin, where are you at this week?
Oh, dear God.
I am going to be at Clarence Worley's light blue jeans. At Clarence Worley's. Light blue jeans. That's my
that
Twitter
photo handle. Makes me so the photo's fantastic. Yeah. It's so great. It's great, Kevin in the shirt and the sunglasses. I'm at Sean _ O'Connell. We are at Real Blend at Real Blend. And we have 199 followers. We are one away from 200. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this,
it could be you
more.
If you're
it
listening,
it could be you. And a reminder.
Oh, wait,
to
I should
iTunes
probably follow us.
And
just so everyone knows, for our 200th follower,
yes.
Gabe will show up at your front door with a cake, and you guys will be rewarded by a viewing of
No, a cake will show up at your front door, and Gabe will jump out of it.
And he'll be wearing his Death Star shirt, which he wears every single week.
Leave us a star rating and a... Kelly West just yelled Grease 2 forever, so someone is watching us on the Facebook page and following along the show. Leave us an iTunes review. We will read it next week. If you guys leave us a new one, we appreciate everybody who is... But really, it means so much to us, guys, that like we're 30 episodes into this, this fun experiment, and we have... 34 star ratings and 14 reviews, and it doesn't sound like a lot, but to us, that's amazing. Yeah, it means the world, and so we're glad that you guys really like what we're doing, and we will be back next week where we will talk more on Fallout, and we'll talk more about what we saw at Comic-Con and all the other fun things that you guys want to discuss. So thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Dunkirk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.